How do you go about proving something? Or, for that matter, proving someone? My wife puts bread dough in a warm place covered with a clean cloth until it has risen and been proved. A young bull or a boar at a testing station gets a trial run to be proved. A new race vehicle or engineering design, any kind of concept, goes through proving trials and accreditation processes. Even when they're proven, they need to be approved, because the process by which they're proven has to be tested itself. And it's approved because it's been found that there are tangible things that show it's the real deal. Enter the Royal Society. When the Royal Society published a research article yesterday, it examined what sort of things induce a person to find religious faith. And when I saw that, I was really interested. So what does lead a person to believe? What the article said was that religious belief arises in people who demonstrate a number of features. Quote, greater caution on speeded tasks and reduced strategic information processing and social risk-taking. But in contrast to dogmatism and political conservatism, religiosity was associated with greater agreeableness and risk perception. Now, to put that in English, they're saying people of faith tend to be a bit tough but quite friendly. There's more. They suggest that, as they say, impaired accumulation of evidence from the decision environment may result in the dogmatic tendency to discard evidence prematurely and to resist belief updating in light of new information. Because religious people are stupid, they say, they're not ready to learn and change their minds. And there's even more. They suggest that the psychological signature of religiosity consisted of heightened caution and reduced strategic information processing in the cognitive domain, and enhanced agreeableness, risk perception, and aversion to social risk-taking in the personality domain. The finding that religious participants exhibited elevated caution and risk perception is particularly informative to researchers, get this, investigating the theory that threat, risk, and disgust sensitivity are linked to moral and religious convictions, and that these cognitive and emotional biases may have played a role in the cultural origins of large-scale organized religions. So again, to put that in English, the suggestion is that believers are believers because they're stupid, stubborn, and scared. Dimwits, stubborn, and scaredy cats. Let's look at the evidence for that, just for a minute. On the day of Pentecost, about 6 weeks after he was tortured publicly to death by the Roman authorities, who were out in force at the time and place in question, a set of undeniably prophecy-fulfilling phenomena broke out at Jerusalem amongst the followers of a religious teacher called Jesus of Nazareth and spread from there. Jesus of Nazareth had spent the last 3 years wandering around healing the sick, raising the dead, stilling storms at sea, and releasing the deranged from their afflictions, as was testified by his followers and as described by those who were not his followers but were at the scene. And then, just a few miles from the Nazarene's place of execution, in the very city where he was condemned, in response to the unique phenomena that had just broken out, up stood Peter, in front of a potentially immensely hostile crowd, to speak about the change of mind he'd had about Jesus and to call on the crowds to have that change of mind too. Fellow Israelites, listen to this. Jesus of Nazareth was a man accredited by God to you, by miracles, wonders, and signs which God did among you through him, as you yourselves know. Check it out in Acts 2:22. And Peter was saying this in front of huge crowds and in the presence of the authorities that killed Jesus. Now that knocks the scaredy cat and slow to change ideas of that research on the head, as does 2,000 years of subsequent church history with a far bigger sample of people to study than was investigated in the Royal Society article. So let's leave the article aside and ask what was going on in this sermon. Well, it was the accreditation of faith in Jesus of Nazareth. In his short sermon, addressed to people of all sorts from all over the known world who'd gathered at Jerusalem and were currently experiencing the phenomenon, which meant that they could all hear what was being said in their own language, with them, Peter appealed to three sources of accreditation for Jesus. He appealed to fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy. This, he said, as they saw and heard what they did, this is what was spoken by the prophet Joel. In the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. That's Acts 2:16-17. And then Peter appealed to their knowledge of what Jesus had done. Fellow Israelites, listen to this. Jesus of Nazareth was a man accredited by God to you by miracles, wonders and signs which God did among you through him, as you yourselves know. That's Acts 2:22. And he appealed to the concrete evidence of the empty tomb a couple of miles away on the opposite hill. You, with the help of wicked men, put him to death by nailing him to the cross. But God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death, because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. 3,000 men believed that day. 5,000 the next. Many of them priests and rabbis and the brightest men of their day, along with every shade of personality type, intellectual background and culture in Jerusalem in those days. And that is the pattern that has been perpetuated consistently through history. All manner of people have looked at the evidence for Jesus, seen that his fulfillment of prophecy, his direct intervention in life and his historical resurrection from the dead show him to be the one accredited by God, and have then gone on to live and often die as a result because they believed it. Here's the point. However clever people sound in their arguments and in their attempt to dismiss faith in Jesus, they really have got a problem succeeding with their efforts. As Peter said, Jesus of Nazareth was a man accredited by God to you. Jesus was accredited by God then, in the eyes of the eyewitnesses of his life, death and resurrection, and that same Jesus is accredited by God in the experience of people across 2,000 years of the history of the diverse people who are the church. Here's the takeaway. It is very possible to be amazingly, cleverly sounding wrong. For a hypothesis to be proven, it must be proven. Does it work? For 2,000 years, the Jesus hypothesis has been tested across a very wide sample of humanity. And it's not just for tupsins, stubborn folks and scaredy cats. It holds water for all manner of people. And bringing that water brings life.